Picture this. You've just rotated. The runway is behind you. You're maybe 250 feet above the ground, climbing at best rate, gear just coming up, and then the engine quits. Not a sputter, not a cough, it just stops. You have about 2 seconds to make one of the most important aeronautical decisions of your life. And here's the thing, if you haven't already made that decision before you release the brakes, you're already behind the power curve in a way that has nothing to do with your throttle. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today, we are talking about the engine failure after takeoff, the famous impossible turn, and the habit that separates pilots who plan from pilots who just react. Let me put a quick word in here for AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every milestone in the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument, commercial, each step marked in metal the way it should be. If you want something you can actually hold that represents how hard you worked, check out AviationSoul.com. Now. The engine failure after takeoff, the Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, is the document your examiner is working from when you show up for your private pilot check ride. It lists emergency procedures as a required task area. Specifically, emergency approach and landing. The examiner wants to know that if the engine quits, you have a plan. A real one, not a panic response. A plan. And the reason this is in the standards is because the National Transportation Safety Board accident record is very clear. Loss of engine power during the takeoff and initial climb phase is one of the most survivable scenarios in aviation when handled correctly, and one of the most fatal when it is not. Here is something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The difference between a survivable outcome and an unsurvivable one often comes down to a decision that was made, or not made, before the airplane ever left the ground. So let's walk through this together. When an engine fails at altitude, you have time. Not unlimited time, but time, you run your emergency checklist. You pick a field, you set up a glide, you have a conversation with yourself, and maybe with approach control. When an engine fails right after rotation, you have none of that. You have energy in the form of airspeed, you have altitude, and you have momentum. But the clock is already running at a modest climb rate. And that rate gets even more modest on a hot summer day with 2 people aboard and full fuel. You might gain 200 to 300 feet before the engine quits. If it quits in the first few seconds of climb, you might have less. And every second you spend processing the shock is a second you cannot get back. This is why the emergency procedure for engine failure after takeoff is, counterintuitively, not really a procedure at all. It is a decision. And the time to make that decision is before you need it. Now let's talk about what pilots actually do in this scenario, because the accident record tells a story. When the engine quits close to the ground, the instinct almost universally is to try to turn back to the runway. The runway is right there, you can see it. You know it is long, it is smooth, it is clear. Everything inside you says turn around. The problem is that turning around costs altitude. And turning around at low altitude with low airspeed in a light aircraft can kill you. Here is the physics. When you bank an airplane, the horizontal component of lift is redirected sideways to turn the airplane. That means the vertical component of lift decreases. To maintain altitude in a coordinated turn, you need to pull back slightly. Pulling back increases the angle of attack. Increasing the angle of attack with a degraded energy state is how you get an accelerated stall. At altitude, this is manageable, you have margin. At 200 feet above the ground with a dead engine, you have almost none, AOPAEA's Air Safety Institute. Part of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association has studied this scenario extensively, and what they found is consistent with what physics would predict. Pilots who attempt to turn back to the runway at low altitude, specifically below a threshold that varies by aircraft, but is often in the range of 500 to 1,000 feet above the ground, have dramatically worse outcomes than pilots who either land straight ahead or turn off to the side and accept a field. Now, does that mean the turn back is always wrong? No, that is the nuance that gets lost in the debate. The impossible turn is not universally impossible. It depends on the airplane, the runway length behind you, the wind, your airspeed at the moment of failure, and critically, how much altitude you had when the engine quit. What the data is really saying is that pilots attempt the turn back without doing the math. They attempt it at altitudes where the geometry simply does not work, and when the geometry does not work, you stall. And when you stall low and slow in a bank, you're out of options. Let's talk about what the math actually looks like. To complete a 180-degree turn back to the runway, a typical light trainer needs a certain radius of turn. That radius depends on your airspeed and your bank angle. If you maintain best glide speed, which for something like a Cessna 172 is somewhere around 65 knots, and you hold a bank angle of around 45 degrees, your turn radius is manageable. But a 45-degree bank at 65 knots with no engine is a lot to ask of yourself when your heart rate just tripled and your mind is still catching up to what just happened. And here is the altitude cost. A coordinated 180-degree turn at best glide takes altitude. Research and flight testing in light aircraft has shown that depending on the aircraft, you are going to lose somewhere between 200 and 500 feet just completing that turn. Maybe more if your bank is shallower because you're nervous. Maybe more if your airspeed has already bled off. Maybe more if the wind is shifting your ground track away from the runway centerline and you overshoot and need to correct. So if you were at 300 feet when the engine quit, the math does not work. You will not survive the turn. But if you were at 800 feet, you might. If you were at 1,000 feet, you have a real case for attempting it. This is why the pre-takeoff decision matters so much. Here is the habit I'm asking you to build, starting with your very next flight. Before you taxi onto the runway, before you even do your run-up, you make a decision. You say to yourself, or out loud, which is actually better, if the engine quits below 500 feet, I'm landing straight ahead. I will use whatever is in front of me. If the engine quits between 500 and 1,000 feet, I will turn toward the open area at 10 o'clock from the departure end. If the engine quits above 1,000 feet, I may attempt the turn back. Those numbers are placeholders. Your actual numbers depend on your airplane's performance, your weight that day, the density altitude, the wind, and what is actually out there in front of the departure end. But the principle is the same. You make the decision in advance while you have all the information and none of the adrenaline. The reason this works is that it converts a reaction into an execution. When the engine quits and you have already decided what to do, you do not waste 2 seconds thinking, you do the thing. And in this scenario, 2 seconds is the difference between enough altitude and not enough. Let's also talk about what straight ahead actually means, because I think this is where a lot of students get stuck. Straight ahead does not mean straight ahead into a stand of trees. It means your primary objective is maintaining control of the airplane and getting it on the ground with minimum vertical velocity. That might mean you accept a road, a field, a golf course, a highway median. It might mean you turn 10 or 20 degrees off runway heading to line up with something workable. What it means is that you are not sacrificing your energy and your altitude trying to make it back to an airport when the geometry does not support it. The airplanes that crash in this scenario often crash at the edge of the airport. They almost made it back. They were low and slow, they stalled in the turn, and they impacted the ground at the perimeter fence or the approach lights. The ones that walk away often landed in a field right next to the airport. They bent the airplane but kept the people alive. There is a version of pride in this scenario that will kill you. The pride that says I can make it back. Challenge that. Interrogate that. Is that your training talking, or is that your ego? Now, what are the key things to have in your pre-takeoff brief? First, look at what is ahead of you off the departure end. Really look at it. Not just a glance down the runway. Ask yourself where you would put it down if the engine quit right now. Trees for a half mile? That is a serious problem. A long open field at 12 o'clock? That is workable. A highway? Possible, but complicated. A lake, survivable if you know your ditching procedure. Know what is there before you roll. Second, brief your threshold altitude. For most light trainers, the research suggests that below 500 feet above the ground is a mandatory straight-ahead call. Some instructors put that number at 300 feet. Some say 700. The specific number matters less than the act of committing to one. Pick a number based on your airplane's performance and commit to it while you're still on the ground. Third, consider the wind. A strong headwind on takeoff means that if you turn back, you're turning into the wind, which reduces the distance you need to fly to reach the runway. A tailwind on departure creates the opposite problem, among many other problems. Know which way the wind is working for you and factor it into your plan. Fourth, if you're at an unfamiliar airport, look at the sectional or the airport diagram before you fly. Know where the terrain drops. Know which direction gives you open ground. Know where the obstacles are off the end of each runway. This kind of pre-flight thinking costs you 2 minutes on the ground. It might be the 2 minutes that matters most. Now let's talk about the check ride, because some of you are actively preparing for the private pilot practical test. The examiner is going to evaluate your emergency approach and landing. The ACS says the applicant must make a simulated forced landing and must demonstrate the ability to maintain best glide speed and select a suitable landing area within gliding distance. What the ACS is really looking for is decision-making under pressure. They want to see that you did not freeze. that you identified a field, that you flew toward it with purpose, that you set up your approach with a plan. The examiner is not expecting you to land perfectly in a cornfield. They are expecting to see a pilot with a process, someone who reacted to the emergency with trained behavior rather than panic. Here is something I see a lot during training. Students practice the power-off glide to a field from altitude, which is great. They get comfortable with the sight picture. They learn to judge the energy, but they do not practice the first second. That genuine moment of silence where an engine used to be part of your preparation should be mental rehearsal. Sit in the airplane on the ground and walk through it. Engine quits on climb-out. What do I do? Where am I pointing? What did I brief? What is my threshold altitude? What is in front of me? Rehearse it until it is not a thought. It is a reflex visualization, is not just for athletes. It is a legitimate cognitive preparation tool, and the research on emergency response supports it. The pilots who perform best in unexpected emergencies are usually the ones who have mentally flown that emergency before. One more thing before we wrap. There is a version of this scenario that is even harder than a clean engine failure, and that is a partial power loss. The engine is running, just not well. Maybe you have 80% power, maybe 50. The temptation is to keep going because the engine is technically still running. This is where accident reports get complicated. Partial power loss on departure is dangerous, precisely because it gives you false hope. You're climbing, just barely, and you're burning altitude, making a turn you might not have enough power to sustain. Trust the numbers. If you cannot maintain altitude, treat it like a full engine failure. The decision tree is the same. The engine failure after takeoff is not going to ask you if you're ready. It is not going to give you a warning or a countdown. The only thing standing between that moment and a survivable outcome is the decision you made before you ever left the ground. Brief it on every single takeoff. Every one. Even the short pattern hop. Even the 3-minute flight to the fuel pump. It takes 20 seconds. It might be the most important 20 seconds of your pre-flight. AOPA's Air Safety Institute has published solid research on the impossible turn scenario, and the National Transportation Safety Board database is searchable and free. Both are worth your time if you want to go deeper on this. Find us at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Fly safe out there.